On Christmas Day, we read one of the most glorious passages in the entire New Testament, the first chapter of St. John's Gospel, which begins with these words. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came to be through him, and without him, nothing came to be. 11 verses later, we read, and the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. And we saw his glory, the glory as of the Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. This marvelous passage tells us that the second person of the Blessed Trinity, the Son of God, whom the Scriptures call the Word of the Father, through whom the entire universe came into being, and in whom we have our being, and the evolution of the universe is sustained, this Word became flesh. This Word came into human life. And what was the context for the Word coming to this world? A family. The Word became flesh in a family. And we call this family the Holy Family. Over here on your left side, we have the sculpture of the Holy Family, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. And they look very peaceful, and very pious. And we might be tempted to think that they were different from your family and my family. And yet, in many ways, we have so much in common. Now, you might be tempted to think they're different from your family. You might think, well, they didn't have any problems. I mean, Jesus is the Son of God. However, if we look at the details of their early life, we can see that they did have a lot of anxiety and a lot of struggle. To begin with, Joseph is engaged to Mary, and that meant, according to Jewish law, they were legally married, even though they did not live together. And Joseph discovers that Mary is pregnant, and Joseph is not the father. So you can imagine how he felt. He felt completely betrayed, and so he decided to divorce Mary quietly. And then, of course, he finds out in a dream from the angel of the Lord that the child is conceived of the Holy Spirit. So he takes Mary into his home, and then when it's time for her to give birth, they have to travel south from Nazareth to Bethlehem, and Mary is almost at the point of giving birth. And so they arrive in Bethlehem, no bedroom to have the child, no hotel, no inn. And they're forced to go out into the cold, into a stable, where Mary delivers her child in the cold of night. And then a third detail about their early life. Soon after the child is born and the wise men come from the east looking for the newborn king of the Jews that they believe has happened because they follow the stars. There was a prophecy about a special star that would signal the birth of a great king. They come and tell Herod, the king there in Judea. Herod is obsessed with power. And so when he hears about this prophecy, he's determined to get rid of that child. And he decides to kill all the children of that age. And so Joseph, as we heard in today's gospel, hears again from the angel through a dream and has to emigrate to Egypt. He doesn't speak Egyptian. He doesn't know anybody in Egypt. And yet they cross the border and they live a few years, we imagine, until Herod died. So these, among some other details that I haven't mentioned, showed that the Holy Family were like our family in the sense that not only did they have a strong bond of love among themselves and have some very beautiful experiences together, they also had a lot of problems and a lot of anxiety. So, how would you describe your family? Just kind of think for a moment. How would you describe your family? There are two common ways that psychologists who do family counseling describe families: healthy families and dysfunctional families. Now, I suppose that all of us at one point or another have elements of being healthy families and dysfunctional families. What's the difference between the two? Both have problems. Both struggle with anxiety, pressures, periodic crises. I think the difference is that healthy families face the problems together. They speak openly about the problems. They seek solutions together. The dysfunctional family reacts to problems by ignoring them or denying them or yelling at each other or refusing to communicate with each other. Today's second reading gives us some principles that guide healthy families from St. Paul's letter to the Colossians. He says, put on heartfelt compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving one another if one has a grievance against another. As the Lord has forgiven you, so must you also do. And over all these, put on love. That is the bond of perfection. Now, you notice in the list of family virtues, he mentions forgiveness twice. So forgiveness has a special place in the mind of Paul with regard to family life, and certainly, I think, in our human experience. How do we make forgiveness real? I've mentioned before that when I was a teacher in the seminary for a few years, I had summers, I was on the academic schedule, so I would go down to Mexico and help in a Marianol mission on the outskirts of Mexico City, because I knew this priest down there, a great priest, a great missionary named Donald Hessler. And in his parish, and he worked in two different parishes, one was very wealthy and one was very poor. And in both parishes, he taught his people a method which he called family confession. And he found, and I discovered when I talked to the families who practiced family confession, it changed family life within 6 months of beginning the practice. And what he would tell them to do, what he would encourage them to do, is once a week or once every other week, the families would gather after dinner at the table or they'd go to the living room, and each would confess any faults they had committed against other members of the family. And he told the fathers to begin, because the fathers, he said, men have more difficulty in admitting weakness and sins than women, perhaps. So this is the way it worked. The father would say to the wife, Susie, I'm sorry that this past Sunday, this would be tomorrow, this last Sunday yesterday, I spent not only all that time in front of the 49ers game on TV, which is perfectly understandable, I spent the rest of the day watching sports on TV. And I know that you were really frustrated with me. You wanted my attention. You wanted me to help with some chores around the house. I was insensitive to you. I'm sorry. And then he would tell the children whatever he felt that he had done to offend the children or hurt the children. Like, he would say, okay, Tommy, I know when I came home from work last Thursday and I was kind of tired, I was in a bad mood, you came up, you wanted to play, and I said, I'm tired, leave me alone, I'm going to watch TV and have a beer. And I know your feelings are really hurt, and I'm sorry. And then after the father has confess whatever he has to say to his wife and children, then he asked them, and this is a pretty challenging question, and now, have I forgotten anything? So then wife and children mention whatever they observe that bothered them or hurt them that the father didn't mention. And then the wife goes on and does the same thing. It says to her husband, perhaps, you know, Steve, I really was a nag this week. You know, I was on your case for you to do this and do that, and I know, you know, it was really irritating to you, and I was over the top with my nagging. Please forgive me. And then she says to the children, you know, okay, so Brenda, you know, you kind of got on my nerves, and I yelled at you, and I said a bad word, and I'm sorry. Please forgive me. And then, of course, she says, now, Steve, children, did I forget anything? And then they'll mention, you know, some little detail that mom might not have noticed. And then the children take their turn. And so little Brenda says, you know, Dad, I'm really sorry that I spilled that ketchup on your white shirt or whatever it may have been. Or then a teenage son says, you know, Mom and Dad, I know you've really been kind of trying to reach out to me. I've had an attitude. I haven't wanted to listen to you. By the way, are there any teens here who have attitudes? Could I see a show of hands for... What a bunch of liars in this group, I'll tell you. So the teen confesses he's had an attitude with his mom and dad. He hasn't been paying any attention to them. And then he says, "And I know I've hurt your feelings, and I'm sorry. Please forgive me." And so it goes on like that. Well, anyway, I talked to a number of these families that had been practicing this family confession, and they all said that it was really intimidating in the beginning, especially for the dads, to say to their children, I've done something to hurt you. I'm really sorry. Please forgive me. Because a lot of the parents felt that they would lose the respect of their children if they asked for forgiveness. But the exact opposite is true. When a child sees that a mom or dad has the humility to admit mistakes, they have nothing but admiration for mom and dad. And the mom and dad are teaching them real humility to admit when I've messed up and say it plain and ask for forgiveness. And then to give the other party the opportunity to say, I forgive you. These are two of the most beautiful phrases that we can say in our family life. Number one, please forgive me. Number two, I forgive you. Those are two very powerful statements that really change us over time. And then, one thing I forgot. When you're doing the family confession, so I'm the dad, I make my little confession to my wife and children, I then ask them if I forgot something, and then I ask them for a penance, just like we do in the sacrament of reconciliation. The priest gives us a little penance, some prayer we'll say or some action we'll do to help us become better. So I, the dad, I say now, Susie, my wife, my children, could you just pray for me for a minute and ask God to reveal to you something I can do to improve, something I could do to help myself grow. For example, one of the families that I met down in Mexico, the dad came to me. This was like a couple of years after he'd started the practice. And he said he didn't really want to do this, but Father Hester kind of put the squeeze on him. And so the family, they got together for their first time of family confession. And so he, you know, confessed a few things he'd done, like been impatient with his wife and had kind of, you know, ignored the kids one day. And then he says, now did I forget something? And his wife said, yeah, you got drunk the other night. And then the children said, well, you know, Dad, you had a six-pack the other night and you were blotto. Well, the husband, who was an alcoholic, he couldn't deny it. But, of course, like every alcoholic, he felt inside he couldn't really stop. I mean, if you really have alcoholism, you feel inside you can't stop. So he had enough grace. He opened up enough to the grace of God that he realizes he better do something. So on his own, he went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and he met some really good it was a men's group, good men who were in recovery. And he started going to these meetings, and he stopped drinking, got into recovery. 2 years later, he was an exemplary father. But it all started because he allowed the family to speak, to say what was really concerning them about him. Now, that's difficult, but that's how we grow. That's how we change. That's how we let the grace of God into our personal lives and into our family life. So, St. Paul is giving us some very concrete instructions for how to have a loving, happy family life. And twice he says, learn how to forgive each other. You have to ask for forgiveness. You have to offer forgiveness. Now, I suppose some of you are not going to... I would hope some of you would begin to do this, but I bet some of you might not. And I have a second suggestion. It's a little simpler, but it often has the same result. Do a best and worst, a best and a worst of your day. So after dinner, you everybody goes around the table and says, well, the best part of my day was, you know, 49ers won. By the way, did they? They did. Okay, good. Okay, so 49ers won, best part of my day. Worst part of my day, Father Kevin went over his allotted 10 minutes to preach, you know, and I got kind of irritated, so I'm already about 12 minutes. So that was best part of my day, worst part of my day, and you go around the table. And what happens, of course, when we say the best part of our day is we often say things that really uplift the family. Like, you know, Dad, say a little 8-year-old boy says, Dad, best part of my day is when you lifted me up and held me and gave me a big hug. I felt so good. And the worst part of my day, Mom, was when you yelled at me. So this gives the family both opportunities of celebrating good moments, loving moments, tender moments, and also acknowledging where we're kind of hurting each other and neglecting each other. So everybody could do that just a few minutes after dinner, every day or once a week, whatever you decide. What was the best part of your day? What was the worst part of your day? And what happens is we gradually learn to say with conviction those two most important phrases that help renew and heal family life. Please forgive me. I forgive you.